We'll begin in Mitzvah Shem, the fifth perek, Ketzad Ma'abrin, on Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis, the last two lines on the Amud. And this chapter is a continuation of the laws of Erev Tchumen. And to explain and clarify how we measure the bounds of the city and its Tchum, because you can have a city that's circular, you can have a city that's square, you can have isolated houses that extend and protrude on one side of the city beyond those batim on the other side of the city. And first he begins by asking the question of Ketzad Modedin es Gvulos Seir, to address the issue of how to measure the outer bounds of the city, so that from there we can calculate the tchum that he's allowed to walk. And we have to clarify the medida of the tchum itself, because sometimes you have mountains, sometimes you have valleys, you have rivers, and so forth and so on. You have to know in what case we can calculate them, in what case we don't calculate them. And at the end of this chapter, we're going to deal with some of the dinim of Erev Chatzeres. The Mishnah says the following with regard to medida of the gvulos of the city and the bounds of the city. Ketzad me'abrim es ha'arim. In other words, how do we classify legally, halachically, a city as me'uberes, which means that we can add different parts of the city that are not really integral to the city. It's not what you call gufashal ir. And for example, let's say this city doesn't have a wall that surrounds it, but rather it's just simply houses that extend onto the boundary and beyond the boundary of the city. And maybe those houses form, in a sense, because the straight line of the facades of the houses, maybe that forms a choma. And it could be that these houses are not a straight line, maybe they're a zigzag kind of thing, and some batim protrude further towards the out of the city. And sometimes you can have bias, one house that's nichnas, that goes litocha, here it goes into the city. Other times you can have a bias that's yotze, it goes beyond chutz, outside the city. And then you can have a case of a city that is surrounded by a wall. And this wall is a round wall, and sometimes it's called a pogum. And what is a pogum? That's going to be a wall that is megadel igulim, that it has certain round areas which are called pogum, and maybe these areas protrude beyond the thickness of the choma. And he can have sometimes a pigum nichnas that goes on the inside, towards the inside of the city. You can have a pigum yotze towards the outside of the city. And hoyusham gedudios, let's say in one of the corners of the city there are breakages of the wall, and those are on top of ruins of houses. Shehen gevos asar tfochim. And these gedudios might even be 10 tfochim high. Now here's a comment of Rashi. Rashi says that from the Gemara later on Daf Nun Hey, we have three mechitzos without a roof on top. The Meiri says that gedudios are mechitzos that are made by themselves, nasu me'aleihem shelo bidei adam. And the Kavanas HaMishnah, what the Mishnah wants to teach us is that these batim which are Meshamesh Dira, and they certainly are integrated into the city. But Afilu Ein Darin Bahem. What if you have homes and no one's living in those homes? Elish Re'uyim Heim Lidira. That for sure people will come and want to live in these houses. And that becomes Ibura Shel Ir. Now the Mishnah continues. Ugisharim, you could have near the city bridges, unefashos. Nefashos are like a building that you build around a kever, like a little bit of a monument. Sheesh ben beis dira, and it could be that that's where the security guard will set up his dira. All these are considered like the city itself, I should say. And the Gemara later on is going to say that the word nefesh and anything included thereof is not mitztaref im ha'ir. It's not considered part of the city. Elim ken yeshba arba amos al arba amos. It has to have a minimum area of 4x4 amos. And motziim es hamida kenegdom. When we set up a simon, we set up a kind of a flag, so to speak, on the boundary of the city so that we calculate 40, we calculate 2,000 amma from there and on, and we figure out where's the end of the Tchum Shabbos. If one of these simonim are bolet bekerem mizrachis tzfonis, it juts out on the eastern side, the northeastern side of the city, then we view it as a blita, as if it protrudes parallel to the Keren Mizrachis Dromis on the southern side, or the same eastern flank, as if to say there's a string that is stretched from one to the other. And that which is inside that chut, inside the string, is considered like it's part of the city itself. That which is beyond, that's considered as a medida of the tchum. For the first, it's as if he's being maskil limdod es hatchumen. In other words, he wants to have tchumei ha'ir shavim. He doesn't want to have ktsarim b'tzad echad, aruchim b'tzad acher. And now the Mishnah enumerates different ofanim of medidas hatchumen, of how you calculate the tchum outside the city, around the city. Osin osan kimin tavlo mirubas. We will make the tchumim of the city as a luach, like a kind of a ledger that is square. In other words, we have a city, let's say, that has lomazogin, the length of 2,000 amma, its width is another 2,000 amma. Then we will calculate the ribua, the square of a circle of 2,000 by 2,000 amma. Kedeshiye niskar esazovios. Right, by putting the circle into a square, you're going to gain the corners, which are called the chronosair. So if you were to only calculate the tchum of the city based on the roundness around the city, then people would not be allowed to go beyond that round gvul as far as the chronos of the city. So the basic law would be 2,000 amma. But if you're going to calculate the tchum of the city biribua as if it wasn't a circle but a square, is biribua is saviv rashoim heim lelech mikrado sa'ir alpaim ushmonimios am. So just to summarize, when we have a house, and one house is recessed, another house protrudes from the city's perimeter, and the homes are attached to each other but did not form a straight line. Some jutted out, some were recessed. Or if a city is surrounded by a wall and a tower is recessed, or a tower protrudes from the wall, or if there are ruins that are 10 tefachim high and extend from one of the city's corners, and these are within 70 and two-thirds amas of the town's perimeter, or you have bridges or tomb buildings in which there was a dwelling place, then these extend the tchum measure opposite them and across the entire side of the city. And since the tchum is measured from the city's perimeter, extending the perimeter extends the tchum. The city limits are determined by lines drawn to include the houses which protrude furthest in that direction. However, a city's boundaries are also drawn at right angles to each other, thus extending the city's perimeter to include a projection in the northeastern corner of the city, for example, has the effect of extending the perimeter across that entire side of the city, as if there were a corresponding dwelling projecting from the southeast corner of the city. And then it says, V'osin osa kimin tavla merubas. We make the tchum boundary surrounding the city like a square tablet. Kideshi ehei niskar es hazovios. So that he gains the area in the corners. So we're talking about a square city. And when we establish the tchum, the boundaries are drawn parallel to the city's boundaries, 2,000 amas away from each side of the city. These lines are then extended until they meet to form a rectangle. So, for example, if the town is 2,000 amas by 2,000 amas, the tchum forms a square of 6,000 amas by 6,000 amas. As measured from the city's corners, the tchum extends more than 2,000 amas for a gain in the corners. That's another 800 amas. So the tchum need not be square. The Mishnah is talking about a square city. If the city is rectangular, not square, then the tchum areas are drawn to form a rectangle. And the Mishnah's point is that the corners of the tchum boundary are not rounded, but join each other at right angles, so the tchum in the corner exceeds 2,000 amas. This ruling we had already back in the Mishnah on Daf Memtes Amud Beis, regarding the measuring the tchum from a place that's outside the city. The Mishnah's ruling here follows the rule of the Chachamim in that Mishnah. The Gemara later will cite a brice that elaborates on this Mishnah. So let's begin the Gemara. And the Gemara says the following. Here's Machlokas between Rav and Shmuel with regard to the derivation of a word used in the Mishnah to describe extending the city's boundaries. Rav and Shmuel, Chad Toni Ma'abrin, one has Ma'abrin with an ayin, V'chad Toni Ma'abrin, Ma'abrin with an aleph. Manda Toni Ma'abrin, Aver Aver. So that the word Ma'abrin is the verb that is conjugating the noun of aver, a limb, and it means we project an imaginary limb parallel to the actual limb, and these projections protrude from the city like a person's limb extend from his main body. And of course, aver is spelled with an aleph. Mandatoni ma'abrin. And if you have ma'abrin with an ayin, then ki'isha ubra, a pregnant woman, that's spelled with an ayin. The Gemara now is going to present three different machlokas in between Rav and Shmuel concerning meanings of various words. For example, Ma'oras Amachpela, which literally translates as the double cave. Rav Ushmuel Machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. Chana Omer, Shnei Batim, Ze Lifnim Mize. It's a cave of two rooms, one room and one in the back, a second room in the back. Chana Omer, Bayis Valial Gav, but rather it means one level on top of the other. It's a two flights. The Gemara asks, Bishleim Lamandi Omer, Zal Gabi Ze. If you can assume that when it says Machpelah, it means that there are two rooms, one on top of the other, is then Hainu Machpelah. We understand why it's called a double cave. Elamandia Mashne Batim Zel Ifnim Mizeh. If it's one room and then another room behind it, my Machpelah, why is it called a double cave? In other words, if both rooms are on the same level, basically it's a single cave, it just has two compartments. And the Gemara answers, Shekfula Bezugos. It has multiples of couples. And in fact, there are four couples that are buried in the Ma'oras HaMachpelah. And that includes Adam v'Chava, and Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah. Those are the couples that are buried in Ma'oras HaMachpelah. Then we have another machlokes. Oh, it says also in the pasuk Mamre Kiryas Arba. Omer Rav Yitzchak, these are the Arba Zugos. Okay, I already spelled out this Gemara. So you have Adam v'Chava, Avram v'Sarah, Yitzchak v'Rivka Yaakov v'Leah. Next machlokas. The pasuk says in Bereishis, Perek Yudal, Vayhi v'Mei Amrofel. And we're going to have a machlokas here about Amrofel. Amrofel was, if you remember, there were four kings against the five kings. He was the leader of the four kings, and he initiated a military campaign. The Medrash says that this was the first instance in history of a war, and Amraphel is the one who introduced war into the world. Another verse states that the world's first warrior was a man named Nimrod, and that's a little bit earlier in Bereishis, and Cush was the father of Nimrod. Nimrod was an Ish Gibor. He was the mighty man in the world. So it seems that Amraphel and Nimrod, therefore, are actually the same person going under two names. Which is the real name and which is the descriptive name? That's Machlokas Rav and Shmuel. Rav Shmuel Chan Omar, Nimrod Shmo. His true name was Nimrod. Lomanikra Shmo Amraphel. She'omar ve'hipil l'Avram Avinu b'toch kivshanesh. It was Nimrod who cast Avram Avinu into the blazing furnace, and that's called Amraphel. Right? Omar means he made the decree, and hipil, and as a result of his decree, Nimrod's decree, Avram was cast into a burning furnace. Chana Omer Amraphel Shmo. According to the other opinion, his name is really Amraphel. Lo Menikra Shmo Nimrod. Why is the Torah given this pseudo-name Nimrod? Shehemrid is kol ha'ulam kulei olam v'malchuso. He led the entire world in a rebellion against God during his reign. And that's called Nimrod, from Himrod, or Himrid, actually. He caused, in the causative sense, the world to rise up in rebellion against Almighty God. Vayakam, another machlokas, Melech Hadash al Mitzray. And this is after the death of the Shiftei Ka, and a new king arose over Mitzrayim.
Rav Shmuel Chanomer Chodesh Mamish. One interprets this literally. There was a new king who succeeded the previous king. V'chanomer Shenischadshu Gzeirosav. It's the same old king, but he started with new decrees. And these new decrees were, shall we say, oppressive at the very least. That's an understatement. Until now, this Paro was tolerant to the Jews. Now he was oppressive of the Jews. Man diomer chadash mamish dichsiv chadash. If we take the Torah literally, it's a new king. Man diomer shenischadshu gzeirosav. Usually the Torah says that one king died and a second took his place and succeeded him. That's all left out here. This must be a new king, because you can't say the old king did not know Yosef. So the Gemara answers, Maya Sharlo Yodas Yosef. It doesn't mean literally that he did not know Yosef, but Havidomi, he made himself Kimandolo Yodele Yosef, as if he didn't know Yosef. So this was the beginning of his harsh decrees against the Jewish people, as if he had never known Yosef. Omer Rav Yochanan, Shmona Sar Yomim Gidalti Eitzel Rav Oshea Beribi. For 18 days I spent with Rav Yoshia, the great Rebbe, the great rabbi, who was the outstanding rabbi in his generation. And I only learned one thing during those 18 days about our Mishnah, meaning what the correct text of our Mishnah is. And I learned from him, Ketzad Ma'abrim Esa Orim, which is bespelled with an Aleph. So the Gemara now points out a stira. Eini, is this really so? V'amar Rav Yochanan, Shneima Sar Talmidim Hoyulo L'Rav Yoshia Baribi. The great Rav Yoshia had 12 students. Ushmona Sar Yom Gitaltim in him. For 18 days I spent amongst them. V'limadati Lev Kol Echad V'Echad. I understood exactly the intelligence level of each one of them. Chochmas Kol Echad, how much each one knew. And apparently Rabbi Yochanan learned a lot more than just one matter about the word ma'abrin with an olive. Lev kolecha v'yecha chachmas kolecha v'yecha gomar. So the Gemara says, yes, he did learn how clever each student was, he knew how knowledgeable each student was, but gomara lo gomar. He did not learn anything of substance, anything that was part of the actual Misorah. Iboy same another answer, Minayu didhu gomar. From the students themselves he learned a great deal, but Mine didei lo gomar, from Rabbi Yoshia he didn't learn anything except for that one item that we mentioned before, that it's ma'abrim with an al. Iboy same a third answer, Dovar echad mi mishnasenu ka'amar. What he meant to say was that as far as Mishnah is concerned, he only learned one thing, but he learned a great deal amount of Brises and other Gemaras. The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Kshayinu Lomdim Torah Eitzel Rav Oshia, during this period of time that we studied Torah under the tutelage of Rabbi Yoshia, we crammed together very closely so that we could hang on to every word. There were no social distancing. Hayinu Yoshim Arba Arba Bi Amma. We were four sitting together in an Amma. Omer Rebbe, Rebbe said, "Kshayinu lomdim Torah to Rebbe Lozer ben Shamua, Hayinu Yoshim Shisha Shishim ba'amo." We were so eager to hear every word that we would squeeze and crowd in six students into an amo. Now, Rabosai, I'm not sure that that should be taken literally, because I don't know if this is physically possible. The Rasha says this is a miracle, that six people could occupy one amo. Rabbi Yochanan tells us about Rav Oshia Barebi. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Oshia Barebi Bedoro, in his generation, Rabbi Meir Bedoro is like Rabbi Meir in his generation, and Mor Rabbi Meir Bedoro, Lo Yochlu Chaver of Laman al Sof Daito, just like the colleagues the contemporaries of Rabbi Meir, could not plummet to the depths of his reasoning. His logic was so profound. He gave arguments that were so convincing, but nevertheless they weren't accepted l'halacha because they couldn't plummet to the depths of his intentions. Is af Rav Yoshi lochlu chaver laman al sof taito. Same thing in Rav Yoshi. On Rav Yochanan, liban shel rishonim kipischo shel ulam. If you compare the minds of the earlier generations of scholars to an entrance hall into a temple, a great, immense entrance hall, then shel achronim kipischo shel hechel. The minds of the later scholars were only as immense as the entrance to the chamber of the temple. The entrance to the hall of the temple was 20 amos wide. The entrance to the temple chamber was only 10 amos wide. So the knowledge of Torah gets gradually weaker as it's transmitted from one generation to the other. And with the passage of time, the standards of scholarship fall. And the Navi Zechariah saw a folded, in his vision, he saw a folded scroll which contained the entire Torah. And the entrance to the hall of the temple had exactly the same dimensions, 40 amos by 20 amos, as that of Zechariah's scroll when it was unfolded and all of its sections were brought into view. So when the Gemara says that the earliest scholars had the intellects that are as large as the entrance to the temple hall, it means they had mastered all the parts of the Torah, including those that were normally hidden from view, namely the mystical aspects of the Torah. V'anu, and now Rabbi Yochanan describes our generation, our minds, kimelo nekev machat sidkis, compared to the eye of a needle that's used to mend tears in clothing. Rishonim, who are the Rishonim that he refers to? Rabbi Yochanan is Rabbi Akiva. Who are the Achronim? That's Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. Ika the Amri, others say Rishonim, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. The Achronim, Rabbi Yoshia Baribi. The Anu, and we are like the entire eye of a needle to mend tears and clothing on Rabbaye. Vanan, what about our generation, already later than Rabbi Yochanan? Ki sichta beguda ligemara. It's like forcing a peg into a narrow hole in the wall. That's how hard it is for us to understand what we're being taught. Amar Rava Vanan, and our generation's ki etzvata bekira lesvara. It's like poking a finger into a hard lump of wax. That's how hard it is to reason out the things for our own self, for our understanding. In other words, a peg at least can be driven partway into a wall with difficulty. A finger cannot be inserted at all into hard wax. It can make a slight indentation. Our powers of original reasoning are weaker than our ability to comprehend what we are taught. Omer of Ashi, Anan, we are ki etzbata bibiro l'shicha. Like inserting a finger into a pit that's just empty. In other words, it's pure air. That's how easy it is for us to forget that which we learn. Now we go back to discuss the people who lived in Yehuda. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Bnei Yehuda Shikpidu al Lashonam. The people who lived in Yehuda were very careful about their speech. They spoke in a very refined way. Niskaima Torasam Biyada. As a result, they were able to retain their Torah knowledge. But Bnei Goliel, however, the residents of the north of Goliel, Shalok Pidu al Shona, they weren't particular and meticulous and careful about their speech. Lo Niskaima Torasam Biyada. They weren't able to retain their Torah knowledge. So the Gemara asks the following kasha. Mide bekpeda talya milsa. Does the issue of whether you can retain your knowledge depend upon how particular you are, meticulous you are about speech? That doesn't make any sense. Ella, but rather, I'll tell you what Rav had in mind when Rav Yehuda quoted him. Bnei Yehuda did Daiki Lishni. The people who lived in Yehuda were meticulous about their language. And they recorded and transmitted the exact language that they heard from their Rebbeim of the previous generation. So the Mesoras HaTorah, the transmission, was precise. Umisnechei Lu Simone. And also, in order to help remember things in the Torah, they assigned symbols, mnemonic devices, to help remember their knowledge, their teachings. Is therefore Niskaima Toroso Biyod. They retained their knowledge. But Bnei Gol Delo Daika Lishna, when they passed on the Torah, they weren't precise about the language. Lo Nistachei Lishim, they didn't assign different symbols to help remember what they learned. Lo Niskaima Tor Biyod. Bnei Yehuda Gomru Mechad Rabbah. The people who resided in Yehuda, they learned from only one teacher, Niskaima Toros and Biyoda, but Bnei Glol Deglol Gomer Michad Rebbe, they didn't learn from one Rebbe, they had various multiple Rebbeim, Lo Niskaima Toros and Biyoda, they forgot their Torah. Because once you learn from different teachers, you get confused. And even if they're both teaching the same thing, they use different words, different expressions, and it's very hard to organize in your mind the nuances of difference and organize it properly. But if you learn from one particular Rebbe, then you get a clear-cut explanation and understanding of the subject matter, and you remember that Torah. Ravina Amar, Bnei Yehuda de Goli Masechta, the people who lived in Yehuda, would elucidate the Talmud. It means they revealed the Talmud, they taught it to others, they also looked and tried to find reasoning that underlied the laws of the Talmud. They studied in depth. Is Niskaima Toros and Viyoda, Bnei Glila Delo Gali Masechta, they didn't elucidate the Talmud, and perhaps they didn't teach it to others, is Lo Niskaima Toros and Viyoda. David Gale Mesachta, David HaMelech, would study the Torah intensively, and he would reveal its deeper meaning. He would elucidate all the tracks of the Talmud. But Shaul, by contrast, Lo Gale Mesachta, he didn't elucidate the Talmuds of the tracks of the Talmud. David Gali Masechta Ksiv Bei. How do I know that in David's case he elucidated the Talmud, as it says, and this is a pasuk in Tehillim, Yirei Echa Yiruni V'Yismachu. Those who revere you shall see me, meaning David, and rejoice. What does that mean? Those who revere you shall see me and rejoice. It means that those who fear God, and the word Yira can be understood as seeing or fearing, they'll delight in David's presentations of Halacha and his decisions. They're all accurate. But Shaul, Delo Gali Masechta Ksiv Bei, in the case of Shaul, who did not elucidate the Talmud, the Pasuk says, Ubechol Asher Yifne, wherever he would turn, and take a look at Nun Gimel Amud Beis, Yarshia, he did wrong, meaning his halachic decisions were not accurate. Let's just add here a comment from the Meiri, that the scholars of Yehuda, before they gave a drasha in public, they would first announce the subject which they intended to teach. The students came to the lecture prepared beforehand. They could ask the appropriate questions, and as a result, they had a better grasp of the subject matter. Now we get to a little bit more about Shaul HaMelech V'Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, Minayin. How do we know Shemocha Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al Oso Avon? How do we know that God actually granted forgiveness for the sin? And we're talking about the Ir Nov Kohanim, the massacre of the inhabitants of the city of Nov. Shaul executed the Kohanim and virtually all the inhabitants of the city of Nov. He suspected them of conspiring with David to overthrow the kingdom of Shaul. And this is the crime that Rabbi Yochanan is referring to here in this pasuk that we're going to see, although it's not explicit. Shenemar machar ata uvanecha imi. This is after Shmuel Amaravi's death, and a spirit appeared to Shaul and told Shaul that tomorrow you and your children will be with me. So Shaul was afraid. On the eve of a major battle with Plishtim, he took counsel from the prophet Shmuel, who had already died, and he enlisted the help of a witch, a Machshefa, Balas Ov. She was able to achieve communication with the spirit of Shmuel, and Shmuel was telling Shaul that tomorrow he and his children would die. They'll be within my division in Gan Eden. And this teaches that Shaul was granted Mechila, and therefore he could enter into the same section of Gan Eden as the one that was occupied by the great Shmuel. That means his sin was forgiven. Amar Rabbi Abba, Iika de Mashil Lehu Lebnei Yehuda de Daiki Lishni. If you ask from any of the residents of Yehuda who are precise in their language, Ma'abrin Tnan O Mi'abrin Tnan, do you read our Mishnah as Ma'abrin with an Aleph or Ma'abrin with an Ayin? Avuzu Tnan, Achuzu Tnan, or for example, the Mishnah in Bechoros, where it says Achuzu with an Aleph, or is it Achuzu with an ayin tanan? What exactly is the proper text? And this is a perek in Bechoros with regard to the balimum that pasal zvachim to hakrov al gabi mizbeach. The Mishnah says that an animal with only one testicle is a balas mum. It's unfit to be a balas mum. It's unfit to be sacrificed. So the animal has two pouches, but only one visible testicle. Rabbi Akiva requires that it sit on its hindquarters, its scrotum and loins are rubbed to see if another testicle will emerge. And the word for the hindquarters in the Mishnah is achuzo, and the Gemara vacillates whether it's achuzo with an aleph or achuzo with an ayin. Yade, those who reside in Yehuda will know exactly which is the correct text in the Mishnah. Shalinu, and in fact they asked the people of Judea, v'amrile, and they told them, ika detoni ma'abrin, v'ika toni ma'abrin, that there are two various and both valid versions in the text of the Mishnah. They all have a basis in the Masorah. And ika detoni achuzo, ika detoni achuzo, or akuzo. Some have it with an aleph and some with an ayin. Both these versions are well formed and have a basis in the Masorah. B'nei Yehuda Daiki Lishnei. We said that the residents of Judea are very precise and meticulous about language. Maihi, can you give me an example in which the precise language of the Judeans manifested itself not only in their studies but in everyday conversation? Dahu bar Yehuda, there was a Judean, the Omar Lahu, who declared publicly, Talis Yeshli Limkar, I have a cloak to sell. Omrule my gavan talischa, what is the color of your cloak? Omar Lahu, he told them, Kasradin alai adoma, kitradin alai adoma. Its color is similar to that of a beet on the ground. Beet is a vegetable, B-E-E-T, and obviously has a red color. He described the exact color. So there should be no ambiguity of what he's selling. Now, in the Meiri, apparently, there's a different understanding of the color of this beet. The color of the cloak was green. The Hebrew word for green is yarok, but the word yarok is a little bit ambiguous. Sometimes it means yellow. So in order to avoid any possible misunderstanding, that lest the buyer think that the color of the cloak was yellow when in fact it was green, they or he compared it to a well-known vegetable. Now apparently the beet plant has a top to it that protrudes alei adama, meaning above ground, and above the ground it is green. B'nei Golil delo daika lishneimai, what would be an example of the B'nei Golil who failed to use precise language? Ha'hu bar galila davi ka'ozil v'yomalahu, this Galilean was walking along and he asked people that he met on the way, Omar leman, who has an amar and who has an amar? Now, they didn't know what this Galili was referring to. His pronunciation was not clear. Omrule Galila Shota, are you a foolish Galilean? Chamor lemirkav, you mean a chamor to ride on? He said amar, but they heard it as chamar, and they thought he was referring to a donkey. O chamar lemishte, or a chamar to drink. Amar lemilbeshe, maybe you meant an amar, which is wool. Amra, Imra is the Aramaic for wool, which you use to make clothing, lemilbish. O imar leiskasia, or are you referring to an imar, which is a sheep, an imra, for slaughter? Basically, they didn't understand what was going on and what the Galili was asking. Another example, ha'id isisa debaya lememra lechavrata, a certain woman who intended to say to a friend, tai di uchlich chelba, come, I want to give you some fat to eat, chelev to eat. Her speech was unclear. Amra la, and here's what she actually sounded like to the person who was listening, shlochti tochlich livya. Shalochti, may a lion eat you. Now, what she had in mind was to say shluchti, my friend, but instead her speech sounded like shlochti, which is a meaningless word. She used the word ta'i and the ochlech, may I feed you, and it sounded as if she was saying tochlich, it will eat you. And the ches of chelba was not pronounced properly, and instead it sounded like tochlich, so instead of chelba fat, it sounded like livaya, which is a lion. Hahi isisa di asio lakame de dina. So this woman came in front of a judge, and she wanted to report a theft of some sort of large tablet. Speech was unclear. Umro le, she said to the judge, and what it sounded like, Mori Kire. My master, slave, Mori Kire. Tafla, obviously. I had a beam, the Ganvuch Min, and they stole it from me. Ukidu Havis. And now it was the Kad Shdaru Loch Eloi. And when they hang it, when they hang you on it, Lomati Karich A'ara. Your feet don't even reach the ground. Anyway, the Gemara says, Amhasa Debe Rebbe. So the maidservant in the house of Rebbe, Kihavi Mishtaya Beloshen Chachma, she was speaking in an enigmatic language, a language of wisdom. It wouldn't be proper for a maidservant to tell students that were dining at the house of Rebbe to leave, so she disguised her speech in riddles. Amra Hachi, she said, Alas, Nokvas, Bakad, the ladle hits the barrel, and then Yidun Nishraya Likinehon, which literally means the eagles should fly to their nests. And this was a disguised way of saying that dining at the house of Rebbe, the students, and the wine barrel is empty. In other words, the ladle knocks against the bottom of the wine barrel, so it's empty, meaning they should go home after they finish the meal. And basically what she wanted them to stay at the table. In those cases, Havias Amrala, who she would say to them, Ya'adei basar chevrita mina, a piece of her friend shall be removed from her. In other words, let's remove the stopper of another barrel, and we could have some more to drink. The siskefe olas bekad ki ilfa di azlo biyama. The ladle will float in the full barrel like a ship that goes to sea. And again, this was a diplomatic way of saying that a new barrel of wine will be opened and the students can stay. Now we have another example of enigmatic speech. Rabbi Yossi Bar Asyon ki havi mishtoi b'loshen chachma. When Rav Yossi wanted to speak in an enigmatic language, a certain diplomacy, Omar, he would declare, Asuli shor b'mishpat b'tur misken, prepare for me an ox in judgment on a poor mountain. In other words, instead of saying, prepare for me beets with mustard, he would use this diplomatic language, because the two syllables for the word for beets, which is trodden, are similar to tur, which is an ox, and din, which is judgment. Also, the word for mustard, which is chardal, if you break it up, it's char and dal. Char, which again the hay replaces the ches, is a mountain, and dal is poor. So Rav Yossi disguised his request for food in riddles, so no one other than the one to whom the remark was addressed would know that he would be eating. And Kadhava Sho'il Be'ushpiza Omar Hochi, when he was inquiring after the welfare of a certain innkeeper, he would say, Gvar Pum Dein Chai, the man of this mouth is alive. Mazu Tova Yesh, what is this good that there is? In other words, he meant to say, is the innkeeper alive? How well is it going with him? Because the word for innkeeper in Aramaic is ushpiza, which has three different syllables, ush, pi, and za. Ush, which is like an ish, a man, and pi is like a pe, and za is like ze. So instead of saying innkeeper, he would say the man of this mouth. And he intended to inquire about the welfare of the innkeeper and his wife, but since it's not proper to ask about another man's wife, he disguised his words in such a way that no one would understand them other than the person to whom the question was addressed. Rabbi Avo HaKiavi Mishtai B'Lashon Chach, when he employed a diplomatic language, Havi Omar, he would say, Asrigu Lepechamim. Asrigu miloshen esrog, and pechamim are pecham is a coal. So make the coals like an esrog. And burn the coals, make them glow like an esrog, so we can warm ourselves up. Arkiu lizahovin, spread out the golden ones, means spread out the coals which glow like gold. V'asuli shnei magide balota, and make for me two indicators in darkness. Prepare two roosters for me. And he referred to a rooster as an indicator in darkness, because the rooster, when it crows at night, informs people of the time of the day. Iko di Amri, another version has it, the Rabbi Avo would say, V'yasu li bahen shnei magide balata. Make with them, meaning with those coals, two indicators in darkness. In other words, roast the roosters on the coals. Omule Rabbanan le Rabbi Avo, Hatzpinenu Hechon Rebbe Eloi Tzofun. Show us where Rebbe Elio is hiding. We cannot find him. Omalahu, Rabbi Avo replied, Olatz Binara, he rejoiced with a young woman, Ahoranis, or Ahoranis. Ahoranis meaning from Aaron, those from the family of Aaron. Ahoranis, the latest one. Eronis, a lively one. Right? Air means alive or awake. Vihin Iresu. She kept him awake last night, so now he's sleeping. Amrila Isha. Some say the Rabbi Avo was referring to a woman, and those Rabbi Loi had remarried. He stayed up the previous night with his new wife. And what he meant by Olatz Benara, rejoiced with a woman, Ahoranis, from Aaron. Ahoranis, she's the latest wife, and it's his previous wife had died. And Eranis, she's vivacious, Vihiniarto, and she kept him awake. The Amrile, according to another version, Masechta, he was referring to a tractate. In other words, that Rav Eloi stayed up the previous night studying a tractate, which means that Olatz Benara, and Rav Eloi was enjoying himself studying a tractate, Ahoranis, that deals with the laws of Kahuna that affect the family of Aaron, so maybe somewhere in Kodshim, and Ahoranis, the latest subject of study. In other words, he had finished another Masechta, and now he's starting this one, Eranis. It's a very stimulating Masechta, Vehinar Iso, and the study of it kept him awake at night. Amri Lei, L'Rabbi Loi, they said to Rabbi Loi, Hatzpinenu, Heichon Rabbi Avo Tzofen. Just the opposite. Where will we find Rabbi Avo? He's hiding. And Omar Lahen Rabbi Loi replied, Nisyoitz b'machtir, he took counsel from one who crowns, Machtir Miloshin Keser, v'hingiv l'mifiboshes. And he went south to Mifiboshes, meaning he was granted permission by the Nasi to go and learn from the greatest scholars who live in the south. The Nasi is described here as one who crowns. He had the authority to ordain rabbis. And the greatest scholars of the south were referred to as Mephibosheth, after the great famous scholar of that name, who was the teacher of David HaMelech. So we're up to the middle here of Daf Nun Gimel Amid Beis. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya will pick this up in Yitz Hashem in the next year.